fish stew. I wanted anything but this. I wanted my dreams back. I wanted Rafe to be a farmer and Walther to be... My chest jumped, and I choked back whatever was trying to shake loose. Something is looming. And now, with these strange erudite men in the cavern, it seemed certain. I felt the loose pieces floating just out of my grasp. The Song of Venda, the Chancellor and Royal Scholar hiding books and sending a bounty hunter to kill me without benefit of trial. And then there was the kava on my shoulder that refused to fade away. Something had been stirring long before I ran on my wedding day. I remembered the wind that day I prepared for the wedding. Cold gusts beating against the citadel, warning whispers winding down drafty halls. It was in the air even then. The truths of the world wish to be known. But it was far more than I had believed it to be. The before and after of my life cleaved in two that day, in ways I could never have imagined. My head ached with questions. I closed my eyes, searching for the gift that I had only just been getting a sense of when I crossed the Camlan Toe. Dihara had warned me that gifts that weren't fed shriveled and died, but it was hard to feed anything here. Still, I kept my eyes closed and searched for that place of knowing. I forced my hands to relax at my sides, forced the tightness from my shoulders, focused on the light behind my eyelids, and heard Dihara again. "It is the language of knowing, child. Trust the strength within you." I felt myself drifting to something familiar, heard the swish of grass in the meadow, the gurgle of a river, caught the scent of meadow clover, felt the wind lift my hair, and then I heard a song, quiet and distant, as delicate as a midnight breeze. A voice I desperately needed to hear. Pauline. I heard Pauline saying remembrances. I lifted my voice with hers and sang the words from the holy text of the girl Morrigan as she crossed the wilderness. "Another step, my sisters, my brothers, my love. The way is long, but we have each other. Another mile, another tomorrow. The path is cruel, but we are strong." I pressed two fingers against my lips, held them there to make the moment stretch as wide as the universe, and lifted them to the heavens. "And so shall it be," I said softly, "forevermore." When I opened my eyes, I saw a small group gathered below me, listening. Two of them were girls only a little younger than myself, and they searched the sky where I had set my prayers free, their expressions earnest. I looked up again, too, scanning the heavens, and wondered if my words were already lost among the stars.
Chapter 21. Pauline.
3 days and two notes later, Gwyneth still hadn't received a response from the Chancellor. She had convinced me that, while I didn't like or trust either the Chancellor or the Royal Scholar after their treatment of Leah, that also made them the perfect ones for Gwyneth to seek out. They would be the most likely to have secrets about her and, more important, be interested in information about her. It was the unknown players that we had to worry about, and at the current moment, that included just about everyone. What difference does it make who we can or can't trust besides the king? Because someone tried to slit Leah's throat when she was in Taravan. I had sat there in disbelief when Gwyneth told me. Leah had explained the injury on her throat as a stumble down the stairs while she was carrying an armload of firewood. It grieved me how much Leah had protected me from during those days just after Mikhail had died. I was so wrapped up in my own misery, I hadn't been there for her. This cast everything in a new light. Traitors were always brought back for trial, and certainly the king's daughter above all would receive that small amount of justice. Someone wanted her dead, without benefit of even a court hearing. I looked upon the whole court and cabinet now with new eyes. Gwyneth's third note to the chancellor, sent early this morning, was answered immediately, with an agreement to meet mid-afternoon. In this note, she said she had news of Princess Arabella. I sat in a dark corner of the pub where no one would notice me, though at this hour the pub was empty except for two patrons on the far side of the room. My hood shadowed my face, and every last wisp of my blonde hair was carefully tucked out of sight. I faced the door and slowly sipped a mug of warm broth. Gwyneth sat at a well-lit table in the middle of the room. I was only to reveal myself if she gave me a signal, and we had to resort to our second plan, me confronting the Chancellor. I was certain she wouldn't signal. She was dismayed that I had come along at all, but I would have it no other way. She accused me of not trusting her, and maybe the revelation that she had once been a spy did give me pause. But mostly, I was afraid to let a single moment slip past when I might be able to help Leah. He came alone, with no entourage or guard to escort him. I watched him approaching through the pub window and nodded to Gwyneth. She seemed not the least bit nervous, but I was coming to understand that Gwyneth was in many ways like Leah. She hid her fears beneath a practiced veneer of steel. But her fears were there, as sure and shaky as my hands trembling in my lap. He sauntered across the room and sat down across from Gwyneth. His cloak was plain, and he wore none of the usual finery on his fingers. For once, he didn't want to be noticed. He settled in his chair and looked her over without saying a word. She did the same. I had a clear view of them both. The silence was long and awkward, and I held my breath waiting for one of them to speak. Neither seemed unsettled by the quiet. Finally, the Chancellor spoke in a strangely familiar tone, making my skin prickle.
"You look well," he said.
"I am."
"And the child?"
Gwyneth's lips pulled to a straight line.
"Stillborn,"
she answered. He nodded and leaned back in his chair, breathing out a long sigh, as if relieved.
"Just as well."
Her coolness turned frigid, and a single brow arched upward.
"Yes, for the best." "It's been years," he said. "You suddenly have information again?"
"I'm in need of funds."
"Let's see if your information's worth anything."
"Princess Arabella has been abducted." He laughed.
"You'll have to do better than that. My sources say she's dead. She met with an unfortunate accident."
The mug slipped in my hand, and broth sloshed onto the table. Gwyneth steeled her eyes to ignore me.
"Then your sources are wrong," she said.
"She was taken prisoner by an assassin from Venda. He said he was taking her back to his kingdom, but for what purpose, I don't know."
"Everyone knows Venda doesn't take prisoners. You're slipping, Gwyneth. I think we're done here."
He pushed away from the table and stood to leave. "I learned this firsthand from her attendant, Pauline," Gwyneth quickly added. "She witnessed the abduction." The Chancellor stopped mid-stride.
"Pauline?"
He sat down again.
Where is she?
I swallowed, dipping my head lower.
She's in hiding, Gwyneth said. Somewhere in the North Country. A frightened little mouse she was, but she gave me the last of her coin to come here and plead for help for Princess Arabella. She told me to go to the Vice-Regent, but I came to you instead, since we have a history. I thought I might get a more favorable recompense from you. Pauline promised I'd get an ample reward for my troubles. I'm sure the king and queen desperately want the princess back, regardless of her indiscretion.
He stared at her, the same severe expression I saw him wear in my wanderings at the Citadel. But now it was intensified, as if he were calculating the veracity of every word Gwyneth uttered. He finally reached inside his cloak and threw a small bag onto the table.
I'll speak with the king and queen. Don't mention this to anyone else.
Gwyneth reached out and took the bag in her hand, as if weighing it, and smiled.
You have my silence. It's good to work with you again, Gwyneth. Where did you say you were staying?
I didn't. He leaned forward.
I ask only because I might be able to help you with more comfortable accommodations, like before.
Very generous of you. Let me know what the king and queen have to say, and then we'll discuss my accommodations. She smiled, fluttered her lashes, tilted her head the way I had seen her do with countless tavern patrons, and then, when he left, she sat back, and a waxy sheen of sweat lit her face. She reached up and wiped damp strands of hair from her forehead. I walked over to her. Are you all right? She nodded, but clearly she was shaken. From the moment he'd mentioned the child, I had seen everything about Gwyneth grow tighter. You had a baby with the Chancellor? I asked. Fury swept through her eyes.
Stillborn, she said sharply.
But Gwyneth...
Stillborn, I said. Leave it, Pauline.
She could say and pretend whatever she wanted, but I still knew the truth. She distrusted the Chancellor so much, she wouldn't even tell him about his own child. A package arrived at the inn the next day. It wasn't addressed to the messenger service, but directly to Gwyneth at the inn. It held a larger bag of coins than the day before, and a note.
I've inquired of the parties you mentioned, and they have no interest in pursuing the matter. They both consider it best left as is, with a reminder that the city is still in mourning for Princess Greta, and their concerns lie now with Crown Prince Walther, whose company of men has gone missing. This is for your troubles and discretion.
The king and queen had turned their backs on their daughter? Best left as is? To be tortured and killed at the hands of barbarians? I shook my head in disbelief. I couldn't believe they would abandon their own daughter. But then the word mourning struck me. I sat on the bed, my strength drained, and guilt overwhelmed me. Mourning, I understood. In all my worry for Leah, I had almost forgotten about Greta and the tragedy that set Leah on the road back to Civica in the first place. Walther's haunting expression loomed in front of me again, and the way he had looked as he huddled in the mud behind the ice house. The horror in his eyes. He hadn't seemed like Leah's brother at all, but a shell of the man he had once been. At least I hadn't seen Mikhail killed right before my eyes. Leah had told me only that he died bravely in battle. Now I wondered if a soulless barbarian like Caden had shot an arrow through his throat, too. I cradled my stomach, feeling the grief again.
We need to leave, Gwyneth said. Immediately.
No, I argued. I'm not leaving just because...
Not Civica, this inn, this hamlet.
The Chancellor figured out where I'm staying. He must have bribed the messenger. Now he'll either be expecting me to be on my way or paying me a visit for other favors. It won't be long before he discovers you.
I didn't argue. I'd heard his voice when he asked, "Where is she?" He hadn't asked out of concern for my well-being.
For when the dragon strikes, it is without mercy, and his teeth sink in with hungry delight. Song of Venda. Chapter 22.
Behind me, Aster, Yvette, and Zakaya laid out the clothes piece by piece. They told me not to look until they were ready. It was easy for me not to peek, because my mind was still occupied elsewhere. I couldn't shake the heaviness in my chest. It seemed everyone and everything I encountered was laced with deception, from Wraith and Caden to the Chancellor and Royal Scholar, even my own mother. And in the sanctum were strange men hidden away in the caverns who clearly didn't belong here. Was anything what it seemed to be? I stared out my window, watching birds flying home to roost. The scaled stone armor of a monster settled into rest, and its jagged back was silhouetted against the darkening horizon. The grimness of night fell on an already grim city. There was a tug on my trousers, and Yvette told me to come look. I wiped my eyes and turned. Yvette scampered away to stand between Aster and Zakaya, all three straight-backed like proud soldiers. Aster's grin faded.
"What's wrong, miss? Your cheeks are all splotchy-flushy-like."
Their faces stopped me, innocence and expectancy, smudges and breadcrumbs, hunger and hope. There was at least something real and true to be found in this city.
"Miss?"
I pinched my cheeks and smiled. "I'm fine, Aster." She raised her eyebrows and looked over toward the bed. My gaze jumped from bed to barrel to trunk to chair. I shook my head. "This isn't what I bought today."
"Sure it is. See right there on the chair. A shirt and trousers for riding, just like you asked."
"What about everything else? It's too much. The few coins I gave..." Aster and Zakaya grabbed my hands and dragged me across the room to the bed.
"Ephira, Maisel, Ursula, and the passel of others worked all day to have these ready for you."
A flutter swooped through my chest, and I reached down to touch one of the dresses. It wasn't fancy, and wasn't made of fine fabrics. If anything, just the opposite. It was stitched together with scraps, pieces of soft leathers dyed in the muted greens, reds, and deep browns of the forest, strips of fur, ragged edges hanging loose, some trailing to the floor. I swallowed. It was decidedly Venden, but it was something else, too. Aster giggled.
"She likes it,"
she said to the others. I nodded, still confused. "Yes, Aster," I whispered. "Very much." I knelt so I was level with Yvette and Zakaya. "But why?" Yvette's pale eyes were wide and watery.
"Ephira liked your name. She said anyone with a pretty name like that deserved pretty clothes."
Aster and Zakaya shot a worried glance over Yvette's head. I narrowed my eyes at one, then the other. "And?"
"Old Elder Haragru had a dream a long time ago when he still had a tooth right here," Aster said, tugging on her front tooth. "And he hasn't stopped wagging about it since. He's not quite right in his head with all his piled-on years, but Ephira says he describes someone like you, who would come from far away, someone who should be wearing... Zakiya reached behind Yvette and pinched Aster. She pulled her shoulders back, catching herself.
"It's only a story," she said. "But Elder Haragru likes to tell it over and over. You know..."
Aster knocked on her head and rolled her eyes. I stood and chewed on my lower lip. "I have no way of paying Ephira for all these clothes. I'll have to send them back with you."
"Oh, no! No, no, no! These can't go back," Aster said, working herself to a worry. "Ephira said they were a gift. That's all. You don't owe her nothing more than a kiss to the wind. And she'd be sorely hurt if you didn't like them. Sorely hurt. They all worked real..."
"Aster, stop. It's not the clothes. They're beautiful, but..." I looked at their faces plummeting from elation to disappointment, and I imagined Ephira's and the other seamstress's faces doing the same if I refused them. I put my hands up in surrender. "Don't worry. The clothes will stay." Their grins returned. I looked at the display covering every free surface in the room. One by one, I lifted the garments, running my fingers along fabric and fur, chain and belt, stitch and hem. They weren't only beautiful. They felt right. And I wasn't even sure why. I turned back to the first one I had looked at, sewn from leather scraps. It had one long sleeve, and the other shoulder and arm were left bare. "I'll wear this one tonight," I said. Aster and Yvette helped me dress. Zakiya bashfully turned around and fiddled with Caden's wooden swords in the corner. Yvette ruffled the thin strips of trailing fur with her small hands while I attached my single tethered bone around my neck. Aster was just lacing up the back when the lock rattled. We all startled, waiting. The door swung open, and Calantha stepped in. The sword in Zakiya's hand fell to the floor, and he scrambled to Aster's side. Calantha's single eye glided over me from shoulder to floor. She eyed the children next. "Get out," she said quietly. They darted past her and heaved the heavy door shut behind them. She explained that Caden had sent her to bring me down to Sanctum Hall. She stepped closer, her hands on her hips, scrutinizing my attire. I lifted my chin, proudly wearing the dress Ephira had made. It fit snugly and perfectly, but Calantha looked at it with a disdainful air.
"The Commissar will not be happy about this." A hint of a smile lit her face.
"And that pleases you? You'd like to see his hatred for me inflamed?" She walked over and touched the dress, rubbing the soft leather between her fingers.
"Do you even know what you're wearing, Princess?"
The flutter returned to my chest. "A dress?" I said uncertainly. "A beautifully crafted dress, even if it's made of scraps."
"It's the dress of the oldest clan of Venda."
She looked at my exposed shoulder.
"With a few modifications. It's a great honor to be given the dress of many hands and households."
She looked around the room at the other clothes.
"You've been welcomed by the clan of Murasi. That's sure to spark the wrath of many in the council."
She sighed, the smile playing in her eye again, and gave me one last long look.
"Yes, a great many," she mused, and motioned to the door. "Ready?"
Chapter 23 Rafe.
"Get your boots on, emissary. The Commissar says I have to feed you." The two of us, alone in my room at last, and my hands were free. It was a chance I had dreamed about every night as I crossed the Cam Lanto. I stared at him, not moving. I could be upon him before he even had a chance to draw the weapon at his side. Caden grinned. Assuming you could even disarm me, would it be worth it? Think carefully. I'm all that stands between Leah and Malik, and 100 more like him. Don't forget where you are. You seem to have a low regard for your countrymen, I shrugged. But then, so do I. He ambled closer. Malik is a good soldier, but he tends to hold grudges when someone gets the best of him, especially someone half his size. So if you care about... I grabbed my boots and sat down. I have no interest in the girl. A puff of air shook his chest. Sure you don't. He walked to the table and picked up the goblet that Leah had sipped from earlier. He ran his thumb along the smudged rim, eyed me, then set it back down. If you have no interest, then we have no score to settle, right? You're only here minding the affairs of your prince. I jerked at the leather pulls of my boot. It was hard to believe we had bunked in the same barn for half the summer. How we had managed not to kill each other then, I didn't know, because there had always been tension between us, even from our first handshake at the water pump. Follow your gut, Sven always told me. How I wished I had. Instead of cutting in on a dance, I should have cut his... Shimentra. It's a word you might find useful, he said. There's nothing like it in the Moragese or Dalbrech languages. Your languages are essentially the same. One kingdom sprang from the other. Our kingdom had to struggle for everything we have, sometimes even our words. It comes from Lady Venda and a story she told of a creature with two mouths but no ears. One mouth can't hear what the other says, and it's soon strangled in the trail of its own lies. Another word for liar. I can see why you'd have need of such a word. Not all kingdoms do. He walked over and looked out the window, unafraid to turn his back on me, but his hand was never far from the dagger at his side. He examined the narrow window as if judging its width, then turned back to me. I still find it interesting that the prince's urgent message for Venda came right on the heels of Leah's arrival here, almost as if you were following us. Interesting, too, that you came alone and not with a whole entourage. Isn't that how you soft, courtly types usually travel? Not when we don't want the whole court to know guarded business. The prince is already assembling a new cabinet to replace his father's, but if they get the slightest hint of his plans beforehand, they'll quash it. Even princes have only so much power, at least until they become kings. He shrugged, as if unimpressed with princes or kings. I pulled on my other boot and stood. He indicated with the sweep of his hand that I should exit first. As we walked down the corridor, he asked, "You find the accommodations to your liking?" The room was basically a boudoir furnished with an oversized bed, feather mattress, netted canopy, rugs, tapestries on walls, and a wardrobe that held thick, soft robes. It smelled of perfumed oils, spilled wine, and things I didn't want to think about. Caden grunted at my silence. It's one of his indulgences, and he prefers not to entertain female visitors in his own quarters. I suppose the Commissar thought his frilly emissary boy would be comfortable in it, and it seems you are. He stopped walking and faced me. My own quarters are much plainer, but Leah seems to be content there, if you know what I mean. We stood, chest to chest. I knew what game he was playing. You think you can goad me into lunging at you so you can slit my throat? I don't need a reason to slit your throat, but I do want to tell you this. If you want Leah to live, stay away from her. and now you're threatening to kill her? Not me. But if the Commissar or Council gets even the faintest whiff that the two of you are conspiring together, not even I can save Leah. Remember, your lies might still be found out. Don't bring her down with you. And don't forget, she chose me over you last night. I lunged, smashing him against the stone wall, but his knife was already at my throat. He smiled. That was the other thing I wondered about, he said. Though you lost to me at the log wrestling event, your moves were quite practiced, more like a trained soldier than a puff of court confectionery. Then maybe you haven't met enough court confectionery. He lowered his knife. Apparently not. We walked in silence the rest of the way to Sanctum Hall, but his words hammered in my head. Don't bring her down with you. The faintest whiff that the two of you are conspiring. And Caden already did have a whiff. How, I didn't know. But I'd have to do a better job convincing him and the rest of these savages that there was nothing between us. I hated that his logic rang true. If I was found out, I couldn't bring Leah down with me.
Chapter 24.
Welcomed by the Clan of Murasi. I knew I should be afraid. The welcome was also going to spark wrath, and further inflaming the council's hatred toward me was one thing I couldn't afford. But I had been welcomed, and I felt it. I couldn't turn my back on that either. I felt it with every stitch and scrap of leather that covered me. A strange wholeness. Little Yvette said Ephira had liked my name. Was it possible that outside of the Sanctum walls there were Vendans who had heard the name Jezaliah before, not just in passing, but in a forgotten song handed down among families? I wondered if Calantha was overstating the ire of the council for her own purposes. I had seen her last night, just as focused on Rafe as the Commissar had been, but surely for very different reasons. "Go on," Calantha poked at my back, pushing me forward. I walked into Sanctum Hall. It was noisy and crowded, and I thought I might slip through unnoticed, but then a governor saw me and stopped, choking on his ale, spray flying from his mouth. A Chievdar cursed under his breath. My arrival ran through the hall like a loose, squealing pig. A ragged path opened up as others caught sight of me. Then, when a group of soldiers stepped aside, Caden and Rafe saw me. They were at the other end of the hall, seated at the table, but slowly stood as I approached. They both appeared to be confused and cautious, as if something wild had been unleashed in front of them. Rafe couldn't know what this scrap of dress meant, and I wondered why he was looking at me that way, too. I kept moving forward, the soft leather snug against my skin. There were whispers about the kava on my shoulder, and a few vulgar sounds of approval. I wasn't the filthy royal beast they had seen last night. Now I was something recognizable, someone who looked almost like one of them. I was a piece of their own history that reached back to the oldest clan of Venda.
Jamave!
Malik and two other Ratan stepped into my path.
What does the Murugi's bitch wear?
Their knives were curiously drawn as if they intended to cut the dress from me, or simply cut me. I steeled my gaze. "Aren't you brave?" I said. "You must approach me with a drawn knife now?" I let my eyes slowly graze Malik's striped face, the trails of my nails still visible across it.
But I suppose your fear is understandable, considering. He stepped toward me, but Caden was suddenly there, pushing him aside.
She wears what the Komazar ordered her to wear, suitable clothes. You question his orders?
Malik's knife was tight in his hands, his knuckles white. Orders or no orders, revenge was taut in his eyes. As long as his face was marked by my hand, it would be. The two other Ratan beside him exchanged a glance with Caden and sheathed their weapons. Malik reluctantly did too, and Caden pulled me away toward the table.
"You'll never learn, will you?"
he whispered between gritted teeth. "I hope not," I answered.
"What do you think you're wearing?"
"You don't like it?" I asked.
"It's not what we bought today."
"But it's what Ephira sent."
"For the sake of the gods, sit down and be quiet."
And he, apparently, would never learn either. I sat on Caden's left. Rafe was adjacent to him on his right, close enough for Caden to keep an eye on him, but not close enough for Rafe and me to share even the smallest word without Caden overhearing. It didn't seem to matter. Rafe's eyes briefly skimmed my Venden attire. Then he looked away and seemed to avoid my gaze thereafter. I should have been glad for his cold dismissal. If Grizz could perceive our connection by peering into my eyes, others might too. It was best that we not look at each other at all, but the pull was still there, and the more I avoided him, the more the burn grew in me. All I wanted to do was turn and watch him. I looked down the length of the table instead. It seated close to 60, so only half of those present were the Sanctum Council. I guessed the rest were favored soldiers or other guests of the council. Caden spoke with Governor Fywell of Darava Province, who sat adjacent to me, and Chievdar Stavik in the next seat, who had slain my brother's platoon in the valley. Just down from them were Grizz and Eben. I wanted to thank Eben for my boots, but with the scowling Chievdar within earshot, I didn't dare. Servants began bringing in stacks of hammered plates, trays of salted pork snouts, ears, and feet, platters of dark meat that I guessed to be venison, bowls of thick gruel, and pitchers to refill empty tankards. The energy in the hall was different tonight. Maybe it was because the Komazar was gone, or maybe it was just I who was different. I noticed the servants whispering more among themselves. One of them approached me, a spare girl, tall and wispy. She hesitated, then offered a short, awkward curtsy.
"Princess, if the ale isn't to your liking..."
Stavik roared, and the poor girl fell back several steps.
"Watch your tongue, maid!" he yelled. "There's no royalty in Venda, and she'll sure as hell drink what the rest of us do, or not drink at all."
A rumble ran down the table, a growing discord that echoed the Chievdar's contempt. The unexpected welcome was being challenged as swiftly as a lash to the back. I felt Caden's hand on my thigh, a warning, and I realized... Even as assassin, he was feeling the edge of what he could control. I returned the Chievdar's stare, then spoke to the girl, who was still trembling several steps away.
"As Chievdar Stavik so wisely said, I'll drink whatever you serve and be glad for it."
Caden's hand slid from my thigh. The discord was replaced with uneasy chatter. Baskets of bread were brought to the table. For all their wretched and coarse ways, no one partook prematurely. They all waited for Calantha to offer the acknowledgement of sacrifice. The same girl who had cowered before the raging Chievdar just moments earlier now came forward, the platter of bones rattling in her frightened hands as she set it before Calantha. Everyone waited. Calantha looked at me, her lone eye narrowing, and then she nodded. The air in the room shifted. I knew what she was going to do before she ever moved. My temples throbbed. Not now. This might be the move that killed me. The timing was all wrong. Not now. But it was all already in motion. Calantha stood and shoved the platter across the table at me. Our prisoner will give the acknowledgement tonight. I didn't wait for dissent, nor for a sword to be drawn. I stood, and before Stavik could utter a word, before Caden could pull me back to my seat, I sang the Vendan acknowledgement of sacrifice, and more. E Christav unter Kienad. The words poured out, hot and urgent, like my chest had been laid open. Meunter ijotande. And then more flowed out, languid and slow, a wordless language, like that day in the valley, remembrances known only to the gods. I lifted the platter over my head. Yavien hal anziadre. I lowered the bones to the table once again and offered the final paviyama. The room was swept silent. No response came back to me. Seconds ticked as centuries, and then finally a faint paviyama echoed back from Eben. The slight tear in the silence opened wider, and more paviyamas rolled down the table and back again, the brethren looking at their laps. The meal began, food was passed, talk resumed. Caden breathed an audible sigh and leaned back in his seat. Finally, Rafe looked at me too, but the expression in his eyes wasn't what I wanted to see. He looked at me as if I were a stranger. I shoved the platter toward him. "Take a bone, emissary," I snapped. "Or are you not grateful?" He glared at me, his lip lifted in disgust. He grabbed a long femur and turned back to Calantha without a second glance.
"It seems that if the Komazar doesn't kill them, they might kill each other,"
Governor Fywell quipped to Stavik.
"The worst enemy is one that you've slept with," Stavik answered. They both laughed as if they knew this from experience.
This was our plan, I told myself. A performance, that was all. The kind of performance that could rip out a heart a piece at a time. Rafe didn't look at me again for the rest of the night.
Chapter 25.
Caden was silent as he got ready for bed, the kind of silence that made every other sound grating. His breathing, the weight of his footsteps, the sound of water poured from a pitcher. It was all laced with tension. He scrubbed his face over the basin and ran his wet fingers through his hair. His movements were brusque. He crossed the room and pulled his belt from his trousers with a quick yank.
"The soldiers told me you sat on the wall outside the window today," he said without looking my way.
"Is that forbidden?"
"It's not advised. It's a long drop."
"I needed fresh air."
"They said you sang songs."
"Remembrances. Just the evening tradition of Morrigan. You remember that, don't you?"
"The soldiers said people gathered to listen."
"So they did, but only a few. I'm a curiosity." He unlocked his trunk and threw in his belt and scabbard. His knife was placed just under the fur rug where he would sleep. He kept his blade close, even in his own locked room. Was it habit or a requirement of the Ratan, who always had to be ready? It reminded me that I still had Natia's knife in my boot, and I'd have to be discreet when I removed it. "Is something wrong?" Was it the way I said the blessing? I asked as I struggled with the laces at my back.
He took off one boot. You said it fine.
But?
Nothing.
He saw me fiddling with the laces.
Here, let me look.
I turned around. Aster seems to have knotted them, I said. I felt his fingers fumbling with the task, then finally felt the fabric loosen.
There, he said.
I turned to face him. He looked down at me, his eyes warm.
There is something else. When I saw you in that dress, I was...
He shook his head.
I was afraid. I thought... Never mind.
I'd never seen him wrestle so much with his words, or admit to being afraid. He stepped away and sat on the bed.
Be careful how much you push, Leah.
He pulled his other boot off. Are you worried about me?
Of course I'm worried about you, he snapped.
I stiffened, surprised by his anger. I've been welcomed, Caden. That's all. Isn't that what you wanted?
That kind of welcome could also bring a death sentence.
From the council, you mean?
We have very little here, Leah, but our pride.
And a prisoner's been honored. That's the problem?
He nodded. You only just got here and...
But, Caden, the people who welcomed me are Vendans. His eyes drilled into me.
But they're not the ones who carry lethal weapons.
There was no denying that the tools of Aphira's trade were nothing like Malik's and his cohorts. I sat down beside Caden. What is the clan of Murasi? Why do they matter so much? He explained that the city was filled with people from all the provinces. They tended to settle into neighborhoods of their own clan, and each had unique characteristics. One quarter was quite different from another, but the clan of Murasi represented all things Vendan, hardy, enduring, steadfast. They honored many of the ways of old that others had forgotten, but from them came the promise of loyalty above all.
They'll clothe their own, even if they have to piece together scraps to do it. Everyone contributes what they can. Their bloodline reaches all the way back to the only child Lady Venda had. The first Komazar remarried after she died and had many children with other wives, but from Venda, there was only one, Muras. So yes, it's an honor for anyone to be welcomed to the clan, but a prisoner.
He shook his head as if trying to figure it out, then looked at me.
It just isn't done. Did you say something to Aphira in the tent?
I remembered her expression when Aster told her my name, and then the soft murmurs when I removed my shirt and they saw the kava on my shoulder. The ways of old. Did the Murasi still pass down the babble of a madwoman? A pretty name, Yvette called it. Maybe it was more than that, but given the council's reaction to my welcome and Caden's apparent disapproval as well, I decided to keep that card close to my chest for now. No, I said. We only talked about clothes. He looked at me warily.
Be careful. Don't push it, Leah.
I heard you say that the first time.
I don't think you did.
I jumped to my feet. Why is this my fault? I shouted. You're the one who took me to the Jahendra even when I said I didn't need clothes. I bought one thing, and they brought me another. If I had insulted them by refusing the clothes, I'm sure I'd be reprimanded for that, too. And tonight, did I ask to say the acknowledgement of sacrifice? No. Calantha shoved the platter of bones in my face. What was I to do? Is there anything I can do that's right in your eyes?
He sighed and pushed against his knees to stand.
You're right. I'm sorry. You didn't ask for any of this. I'm just tired. It's been a long day.
My anger cooled. Maybe it was just part of his training as an assassin not to show it, but Caden was never tired. He was always alert and ready, but his fatigue was evident now. I lifted my foot onto the frame of the bed to unlace my boot. Where were you all day?
Duties. Just attending to my duties as keep.
What kind of duties would take a toll on him like this? Or maybe he wasn't well? He grabbed blankets from the top of the chest and dropped them to the fur rug.
I'll take the rug tonight, I offered. No, I don't mind.
He took off his shirt. His scars always stopped me, no matter how many times I had seen them. They were a harsh reminder of how brutal his world was. He snuffed the lanterns, and once I had changed, he blew out the candle, too. Tonight there weren't even dancing shadows to ease me to sleep. It was quiet for a long while, and I thought he had already fallen asleep. But then he asked,
"Was there anything else you did today?"
He wasn't too tired for his mind to still be churning with questions. Did he suspect something? What do you mean by else?
Just wondering what you did all day, besides climb out the window.
Nothing, I whispered. It was a long day for me, too. The next day, when Caden had to go out, he had even come to keep me company, but I knew it was a ruse to keep an eye on me. Eben was guarding me, just as he had in the vagabond meadow, except that things were different between us now. He was still the trained killer, but now there was a chink in his armor, and a softness in his eyes that hadn't been there before. Maybe it was that I had spared him the burden of killing his own horse. Maybe my whispered acknowledgement of Spirit's name allowed something he had hidden inside to bloom, just a little. Or maybe it was that we shared a similar grief, watching someone we loved be butchered before our eyes. On Caden's orders, Eben was allowed to take me out of my room, but not outside of the sanctum, not to this wing or that tower, only to a narrowly prescribed area.
"For your own safety," Caden said when I shot him a questioning glare.
In truth, I knew he was trying to keep me out of Malik's path and that of certain council members. By the end of the meal last night, it was apparent that hostility still ran high, more so among a few because of my welcome. But the ever-united council seemed divided now into two camps, the curious and the haters. Eben took me on a circuitous route to the paddocks behind the council wing. A new foal had been born while he was away. We watched the stick-legged foal frolic in a small corral, jumping for the sheer pleasure of trying out new legs. Eben balanced on the paddock rail, trying to restrain a smile.
"What will you name him?" I asked.
"He's not mine. Don't want him anyway. Too much trouble to train."
His eyes flashed with every pain he still carried, and his tender years made his denial wooden. I sighed.
"I don't blame you. It's hard to commit to something after..."
I let the thought dangle in the air. "Still, he is beautiful, and someone has to teach him. But there are probably trainers who are better at it than you."
"I'm just as good as any old wrangler. Spirit knew what to do with just a twitch from my knee.
His chin jutted out, and then, in a quiet voice, he added,
"He was given to me by my father."
And now I knew the true depth of Eben's grief. Spirit wasn't just any horse. Eben had never made any mention of his parents. If Caden hadn't told me that Eben had witnessed their butchering, I'd have thought he was spawned by some impish beast, and dropped to earth fully dressed and armed as a small Venden soldier. I understood the hole that Eben felt, the wicked depth of it, that no matter how much you wanted to pretend it wasn't there, its black mouth opened up to swallow you again and again. He shook off the mention of his father in a practiced way, flicking his hair from his eyes and jumping down from the rail.
"We should go back," he said.
I wanted to say something wise, something comforting that would lessen his pain, but I was still feeling that hole myself. The only words that came were, "Thank you for my boots, Eben. They mean more to me than you can know." He nodded. "I cleaned them, too." I wondered if, like Grizz, this was a kindness to wipe out a debt. "You owed me nothing, Eben. I took care of your horse for me as much as for you."
"I already knew that," he said, and hurried ahead of me.
We walked back through yet another tunnel, but I was getting good at memorizing them now, and I was beginning to understand a pattern to the chaotic layout of architecture. Small avenues, tunnels, and buildings emanated from larger ones. It was as if many large structures within this ancient city had slowly woven together, a graceless animal that grew extra arms, legs, and eyes without regard to aesthetics, only immediate need. The sanctum was the heart of the beast, and the hidden caverns below, the bowels. No one ever mentioned what stirred beneath the sanctum, and I never saw the robed figures at meals. They stayed to themselves. As we walked the last hall to Caden's room, I asked, "Eben, what are those caverns down below? Aster mentioned them to me."
"You mean the catacombs? Ghoul caves, Finch calls them. Don't go down there. Only thing in them is stale air, old books, and dark spirits."
I suppressed a smile. It was almost the same description I used for the archives in Civica. Only there, the dark spirits were Civica scholars. The next few days passed as the previous, but each one was shorter than the day before. I learned that time plays tricks when you want more of it. With each day that passed with no sign of Rafe's soldiers, I knew that Venden riders could be that much closer with news that the Dalbrek King was hale and hearty. A death sentence for Rafe. At least the Komazar would be gone for 2 more weeks. That would buy us more time for Rafe's soldiers to appear. I tried to hold on to that hope for Rafe's sake, but it was looking more certain that finding an escape was left only to us now. The weather grew colder, and another icy rain drenched the city. In spite of the cold, each day I climbed out the window and sat on the wall and said my remembrances, searching through them like shuffled papers, trying to find answers, holding on to those that held a glimmer of truth. Each day a larger group gathered to listen, a dozen, 2 dozen, and more. Many were children. One day Aster was among them, and she called up for a story. I began with the tale of Morrigan, the girl led by the gods to a land of plenty, then told the story of the birth of 2 of the lesser kingdoms, Gastineau and Courtenay. All the histories and texts I had studied for years were now tales that mesmerized them. They were as hungry for stories as Eben and Natia had been when we sat around the campfire. Stories of other people, other places, other times. These moments at least gave me something to look forward to, because there was no opportunity to talk to Rafe privately. Even when Caden left me locked alone in his room and I snuck out, I discovered there were now guards posted below Rafe's window, too, almost as if they knew he couldn't slip out through the narrow windows, but someone smaller might slip in. The evening meal afforded me no greater opportunity for a private moment, and my frustration grew.
Here in the sanctum, we might as well have been separated by a vast continent. I attributed my restless dreams to my aggravation. I'd had another one of Wraith leaving, but it had